Welcome to the Pope St. John the 23rd Vocation Podcast with Monsignor William Fay. Here at Pope St. John the 23rd Seminary, we realize it's never too late to respond to God's call. If you're a man 30 or older, discerning a possible call to the priesthood, or someone who supports these later vocations, this is the podcast for you.
Good day to everyone, and welcome back to our podcast, Never Too Late, at Pope St. John the 23rd National Seminary. It's always a delight for me to have an opportunity to sit down with one of our seminarians and in a conversation help those of you who tune into us to understand something more about what a vocation is, especially in the case of older seminarians, and what the priesthood is all about. And so we welcome you and are delighted to have you with us today. I'm very happy to welcome today Deacon Jason Fox from the Great Diocese of Columbus. Jason is in his fourth year and, please God, will be ordained to the priesthood this spring. Jason, it's a delight to have you with us today.
Thank you, Monsignor.
You're very welcome. I'm going to ask you about your vocation, and it's a question I ask a lot of the guys, and it basically is just this. When did you first start thinking about the priesthood? And what was that journey of getting to the seminary and doing some actual priestly formation all about for you?
Well, I would say that I first thought about the priesthood when I was about 8 years old, and that was the teacher in school asked me what we wanted to be when we grew up, and I said I wanted to be either an astronaut or a priest. And she was very stunned by that answer, and I was also, because I was kind of surprised that I had said that. My grandmother was instrumental in forming me in the faith, and it was through her that the first idea sprouted. I never abandoned that idea after when I was growing up. I actually visited a high school seminary. Those aren't very prevalent anymore. That was St. Peter and Paul in Ohio, and there were 80-some students in the entire seminary from, you know, freshman through senior, and I went there. My stepmother was a public school teacher, and she was not very keen on me moving away and going to boarding school. So after that, I went through, you know, some youth group and, you know, that sort of thing. And I saw on the back of my parish, there was a little pamphlet for the Legionnaires of Christ. And so I took one of these pamphlets and I started talking with that order, and they came to visit me. Then I decided that I would go visit them. And it was probably the most beautiful seminary experience I've ever seen. It was, they all lined up and entered the chapel singing Gregorian chant and filling up the pews, and I thought it was absolutely beautiful, but absolutely not for me. And so I said, I am not supposed to be a priest. And after that, I started the secular way of life and college and just a typical, but it never left me, and it was always an urging. And it was during Eucharistic adoration that I got my second calling, and it was undeniable. And I put up a lot of barriers. I'm too old to do this. I'm this, I'm that. I can't be a priest. And it was funny because God smashed all those walls that I built up, mm-hmm. preventing me from pursuing. Right in front of my eyes. And then I had a meeting with my pastor, Father James Black, and I said, you probably think I'm crazy, but I think I have a calling to the priesthood. And we sat down and we talked for about an hour and a half. And at the end of it, I was expecting him to say, you know, no. But he said, yes. He said, I really do think you do have a calling to the priesthood. And so he introduced me with my vocational director, who at that time was Father Paul Noble, who coincidentally was the principal of that high school seminary when I was visiting. So yeah, it was like a full circle. So it was very interesting.
Interesting. How old were you when you finally sat with Father Black and really came to the conclusion that you ought to pursue this?
I was 43.
43 years of age. Good for you.
Yeah. And then I sat with my bishop and his one concern. My college education was in law enforcement and criminal justice. And I had never taken any philosophy, which is so vital, as you know, to, you know, successful theological studies. And so his concern is that I had taken no philosophy courses. So for 1 year, I went to Ohio Dominican in Columbus, Ohio, and took philosophy courses.
Good for you.
To prepare myself to better, you know, and he wanted to see how I was going to do with philosophy.
Yeah, yeah.
It's not for everybody, but to my surprise and his also, it absolutely fascinated me, as you can tell during classes. I love philosophy courses. So.
Good for you.
Yeah.
Good for you. You know, a couple things that you said I want to go back to. One of them is this notion of philosophy and why it's so important for theology. You know, philosophy is nothing other than just getting clear about the way nature is around us and having some real clarity about what is. And theology is nothing else but our getting clear about what God has said about himself. And the two of those things are never going to be in contradiction, because God is both the author of creation and he's the author of his revelation about himself. And so if you can look at reality and have it as it is, you can understand why God is saying certain things about himself. So they're really, philosophy is a handmaid to theology in a lot of ways, which is really, really a beautiful thing.
And it's very interesting when you go through the courses and you're learning how to think, which I think is a major benefit of philosophy. It teaches you how to think. You can actually see the puzzle pieces all start to fit together, and you start to see the picture, and you're like, wow, there's no denying this. There's no question.
Yeah. And that's just one of the beautiful things. The more you can think about the real around us and have that gift of reason, the more you can understand why God speaks the way that he does to us, which is just a very, very beautiful thing. On the coming to the vocation, what was it about the seminary, the Legionnaire Seminary that you went to, that had you saying, I don't see myself fitting into this? What was it that didn't seem appropriate?
Well, you've known me for 4 years, so you know that I have, you know, I tend to be an extrovert. And the Legionnaires, there was no talking in the hallways. There was no talking during meals. There was no talking at all. And, you know, you only spoke when you were spoken to. And it just, I am more boisterous than that very confining environment.
It works, and that kind of life works for certain kinds of people, but you were good to discern that, no, that I wouldn't fit there. That doesn't
And my mistake was thinking that the religious life and the diocesan priesthood were so similar when there's differences.
The different charisms.
Yeah,
the
absolutely.
Different charisms, there's no question about it. Contrast that then to your experience here, because having gotten to know you over these 4 years, it's clear to me that you fit here beautifully and you know, are very cheerful about the fact that you're here. What brings that about?
Well, just coming to the seminary for my first visit, that was, gosh, that was 6 years ago now, 7 years ago, because it was before I went to Ohio Dominican for the year. I immediately felt like I was at home. I got along with people right off the bat, one of them being Mark Harris. He was here and he was showing me around, and we became wonderful friends, and we had numerous diocesan brothers at that time. There was three, Stephen Andre and Father Brian Beale, Father Stephen Andre, and Father Ed Shekina. They're they have all. And
all from Columbus.
Yeah, all from Columbus. And so I had home, and I had lived in Boston before, and so I knew the area. And it just, for me, it just all clicked together. And I was like, oh, I can do this. You know, it's not that very rigid, you know, living experience that, mm-hmm. like, just visiting the Legionnaires, mm-hmm. I found was, you know, off-putting to me. Mm-hmm. But there's several rooms that are just strictly for socializing and gathering together. The Gilmartin room, the room downstairs, where there's such an interaction with each other that relationships, lifelong friendships, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. are easily formed.
Yeah.
Where other places it could be more of a struggle.
Talk a little bit about adapting to the seminary, because you were living on your own, you were doing your own thing, had your own schedule, your own way of life, and coming here, you have to step into what we call the four dimensions of formation, you know, and how was it for you adapting to that way of life and looking at your human development, your spiritual development, your intellectual development, and growing to be a pastor, yeah. you know?
Well, first off, my spiritual director back then was Father Hoppo, who was just this very jolly man, and he put me at ease, because I had never had spiritual direction in such an intensive way, where you want every month, and he just said, you know, you and I are so much alike, when I was reading your bio, and so that put me at ease with him. And over that, the course of that year, we had found, we established a very strong bond of trust. And I could tell him anything. And he was just, he always had a smile on his face. He was always just so warm. Mm-hmm. And then my human formator, Father Bellafiore, mm-hmm. was just also a brilliant man. And he could see, I don't know how to put it, but he would view me in a way that I did not see myself, and he was right around the corner from me, so he saw me all the time, and he could see my strengths and my weaknesses that I really didn't, and so we would discuss those, and I was quite surprised at some of the mm-hmm. strengths he thought I had, mm-hmm. and so the formation in those two areas was, you know, trust and bonded through, you know, mm-hmm. very strong ties of, you know, familiarity and comfort.
Good. Let me say a word about that. All the men here have a spiritual director, mm-hmm. someone who, in some instances, many instances for the guys, becomes their confessor as well. Mm-hmm. And they work together in what we call an internal forum. In other words, what goes on in those conversations between the two is a radical kind of confidentiality. So the spiritual director does not disclose what goes on in spiritual direction. The only thing he would let us know is that a man is meeting on a monthly basis and you know, engaging well in spiritual direction, but beyond that, he can't say anything. The person in what we call the external forum is what we refer to as the formator, and he works with the seminarian on all the areas of formation, the spiritual, the intellectual, the pastoral, and the human, and in looking at those, they talk candidly back and forth about how the man is doing in those without going into the deepest part of a man's life, which is left to spiritual direction. So each of the men have those fellows, and they become mentors in many ways, bringing you along and helping you to develop the way that you did. Mm-hmm. It wasn't a shock to you to come back to education, because you said that you had spent some time in philosophy just before coming here, huh?
Right, yeah.
So you had made the acclimation already to the intellectual life. Some of the guys who come here may not have been in studies for 20, 30 years.
Right.
They worry about it, but I don't know that there's anybody in my 6 years here on the faculty that has ever left the seminary principally because they found the intellectual life overwhelming. We managed to help guys along.
Oh yeah, I couldn't imagine that would be a crippling experience. The academics here, we have wonderful staff, wonderful faculty, and they know the difference between a 20-year-old, you know, taking an exam and a 40-year-old. We learn differently, yep. and we process information differently, and the academics have been tailored to that, to be able to have the older mind, I don't know if that's a good term, but have the more mature mind how we view the world mm-hmm. and reality and how we can process the information that we need to mm-hmm. understand right. and be able to, yeah. you know, put out to the faithful.
Yeah. You leave here knowing what you need to know to be a good priest, but the way in which you get to that point is very different than the way in which we might educate or form, as you say, the 20-somethings, you know, who yeah. are guys in the seminary just right out of college or shortly thereafter.
Yeah, and we know how to behave.
Yeah.
We've been in the world, so the rigidity in discipline is not here. Mm-hmm. It's not necessary. Mm-hmm. And but the social aspect is definitely here with, you know, meals together and, like I said, different rooms and getting to know everybody who's on your floor and even your flushmate, the person mm-hmm. who you learned to share a bathroom with another man. That's quite, you know.
That's
something new. Yeah.
After you've been living on your own.
Yeah.
What do you see, what would you say was the most surprising thing to you about seminary life and priestly formation?
Surprising. Well, I didn't expect, like I said, when I had come here for the visit, almost instantaneously, I felt like I was at home. Mm-hmm. And that was very surprising for me because I lived on my own for years. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden, back then, I think our numbers were in the 70s. Mm-hmm. You're sharing a limited space with 70 other guys. Mm-hmm. But just how easy of an adaptation I made. It mm-hmm. was, there was no struggle. Mm. In, you know, now you're in this one room and you have a flush mate and you have to be at prayer at 7:40. It seems overwhelming, but it's not. Yeah.
There's not much of a learning curve to it. No. It's just the pieces fall together and they fall together very nicely.
I would say after about 2 weeks, it's funny when you go through the, you know, the different years, looking back on your first year, when you're in second year, and when you're in third year, looking and watching the development. But I would say within 2 weeks, everybody's got the schedule pretty much down, and they're ready to go.
Yeah. What are you most looking forward to in the priesthood?
It's the sacraments. I cannot wait to consecrate the Eucharist. I cannot wait to hear confessions. I've been baptizing now for this past year as a deacon, and I love baptizing little babies. Yeah, I love it. And so if that passion that I have found in just one of the sacraments goes over into all 7 sacraments, I'm going to be a very, very happy man.
Good for you. Yeah. And it will. Yeah. It will. This summer I'll be celebrating 50 years of priesthood, and I can't believe, first of all, that so many years have gone by. But secondly, how satisfying and rewarding. I can't imagine myself doing something else that would have been as fulfilling. It's just, right. It's a wonderful, wonderful, wonderful thing. Well, I want to thank you for joining me today, Deacon, and for the great opportunity you gave us to open up your life a little bit and tell us about how it is that you made this journey to the priesthood and that you did the last 4 years of it with us. So thanks very much.
Well, thank you very much, Monsignor.
And I want to thank all you folks who are joining us and remind you that if you see a man who is older but is available and able to do priestly formation, that you might say something to him. We talked about the beginning that the Lord wasn't going to let go of Jason. He wasn't finished with him when he was saying no to this. In fact, he was knocking the barriers down. The Lord, in many ways, is, as Francis Thompson describes him in that wonderful poem, a hound of heaven. And sometimes you're just saying something to a man about a possible vocation that he has might be the key that just unlocks his thinking in such a way that he could look at it. So thank you for doing that. Thank you for your support. I want to thank, as always, our producer here, Jerris Aziz, who is so good at recording and editing our work. I want to thank Rita Casey, who's responsible for making sure it gets out there for you to see. And naturally, we thank our friends at Catholic TV here in Boston, who were so wonderful in helping us with the production. So thank you all again. Keep us in your prayers as we remember you, and may God continue to bless you richly.
Thank you for listening, and be sure to check out our website at www.psjs.edu. Remember, the first step to answering God's call is making the call. 781-899-5500.